care what each one of us thinks. You need to interpret the communication or information or data as it comes. And you either can do that or you can't do that. I think what you prefer as your favorite input is an irrelevant construct.
Well, yes, but it's a necessary evil. If you want to get some information across as efficiently as possible, it's best to use one single mode rather than fragment it among 20 different modes. At least I think so. But I've always vowed to the inevitable that you simply can't do that. People will not agree on a mode of choice. And, yeah, there are some people who don't care about words. There are some people who just want to get by to the end of the day. There are other guys who are into the bread and circuses. You know, last week they sat there and they watched the Super Bowl. Good for them. Did they learn anything? I guess, maybe. I don't know what, but maybe. So, you know, everyone has different motivations. And, you know, as long as they don't screw things up for me, you know, share with them, you know, whatever goes, as long as you don't frighten the horses. I would like people to engage verbally, because I enjoy doing that, so that's a vested interest on my part, perhaps. But there are other people who just don't want to do that. They don't care. It bores them. Different people have different fields of interest, and you're not going to change it. You could get the most eloquent person out there giving a soliloquy, but if it's on the subject that the person doesn't care, they still don't care.
All well considered comments. But I am unlikely to produce a song tonight, or last night, or the night before, or tomorrow night. But I can throw out a couple thoughts that make people think. Maybe they'll throw back a thought in my direction. Those are all fine things. And reality is what it is, and we draw our perception of it from with the help of others. And I think we need to help each other more than we've been doing. Well, I came from it just came out right now, but that's my thought for tonight.
AC2GS. Well, they're good thoughts, Jim. I think we all, you know, I end most of the nets saying be kind to each other, and, you know, it's sort of the same situation. We need to be a little bit more forgiving and a little bit more generous with each other and help each other out. You know, that's one of the many aspects I like about this hobby. There is a significant degree of mentorship that goes on in this hobby, which I enjoy being involved in. I spent many an hour sitting, listening on my radio to the Limark Technical Net, listening to K2RIW and Eric and John, KT2WGB, and a lot of very smart guys who kind of gave me a better idea of how things work. And I like the opportunity to kind of return the favor and pass it forward. You know, it's one of the many, many things I like about this hobby. There are people in this hobby who have a weird idea that if you don't prove to them that you are worthy of the knowledge, then screw you, which I've never quite understood. And there are other hobbies that are less into mentoring and more into just doing whatever they're doing. I think we could always be better to each other. I think there's no top to that.
Interesting thoughts. I appreciate it. I think there's a break in station. So let them cut it.
Roy, this is W2BZ. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
W2BZ, net control. Can you hear me?
Yes, Rich, I can hear you on Echolink. I see you on Echolink, and I hear you on Echolink.
Okay, well, even on Echolink, I'm hearing a tremendous amount of noise on the Sheldon repeater. It's just more noise than I've ever heard on it. And like I said to you during the week, I'm going fine into other repeaters, even one in Sheldon. So I wonder if anybody knows if there's something going on or if they're having trouble transmitting to or receiving from the Sheldon repeater.
Okay, I have noticed that people on the Sheldon repeater have been noisier. It's been difficult for me to discern whether it's the repeater link or whether it's the connection into Sheldon, but the things have been kind of crunchy. If anyone out there has any further information about this situation with Sheldon and with the link from Sheldon, please feel free to share.
WS2NAMY. Good evening, gentlemen. I'm actually using the radio directly to the Sheldon repeater at this moment. I'm not going through Echo Link. How am I coming in? Clear? If I'm coming in clear, then it might be something else. Over.
Yeah, there's just a little hint of crackle in your background, but for all intents and purposes, it's nice and clean.
Roger, thank you. That clarifies at least something out there. It's got to be something with the repeater end. I do hear you particularly coming back to me loud and clear and no crackle at all. There was another gentleman on. I just jumped on myself, so I apologize. I haven't gotten all the call signs written down yet. But the other gentleman that you were speaking to was crackling substantially. So I think being that they're coming through the Echo Link, perhaps coming out of the repeater, it's crackling more. Over.
Okay, the only one who's been on Echo Link tonight is Rich W2BZ. Everyone else has been either in Glen Oaks or in Sheldon. But he's the only one who's going through Echo Link as far as I'm aware.
Copy that. KE2AM1.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Sounds like if you have a strong signal into Sheldon, you're okay, but there's a fine little crackle, even with that. But if it's a weak signal, that crackle takes over, and that's why you're, that's why there's a problem. So I guess Lou's going to have to investigate this. But I don't hear him on. Back to you.
Yeah, I think he's, I don't know if he's come back from Florida yet, but last I heard he was in Florida.
Okay, another station came in under you, but you took him out, Roy.
Okay, other station, you want to try it again?
That's KD2BHC. I was curious where I fit in that signal category. Am I going in strong or weak out of Sheldon?
Weak. You got about 20 to 30% of the background noise on you.
Interesting. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Ed had about 70 to 80% noise, and when Rich W2BZ tried to go in through that repeater, it was 99% noise.
Roger, thank you.
Okay, unfortunately, I think our crack repeater technology are elsewhere tonight.
In the noise level,
will be returning to
the
New York area.
So there's definitely something going around because
I don't think
he's the S9 with noise, and then he's the S4 with
other
noise.
Things he does.
But
definitely
a louder signal than a lower signal.
If anyone has any better idea,
I guarantee you something's going on with the repeater.
I think
because
we're
I know this repeater
kind of
very well
until,
by now. And
kind of,
my antenna, my equipment have
been
changed,
in the next few days,
and I get into other repeaters around the area,
look
fine,
might
with
be going
no,
on
you know, full quieting, with no noise at all. So, just the QSB alone on Ed's
Ed's
signal
been talking the whole time,
tells me something's going on.
Okay, unfortunately, Rich, we were doubling, and I think the way that Lou has Echo Link set up, it kind of takes over the transmitter, so I guess I wasn't heard. So I didn't really hear what you said either, because I was busy talking.
Roy, you're dropping in and out of Echolink completely. In and out of Echolink, every other word.
Okay, I don't know what to tell you. Hopefully I'm not dropping in and out of the repeater, so it might be some flakiness with AirLink and Echolink and all the other little links in a row. I don't know what to tell you.
You're a DFQ.
All right, just, you know, does anybody know if they worked on the antenna at the Middle Island?
I guess that is a no. By the way, John, KD2BD, who can't get into the repeater, but he's in the chat room and he's listening, told me that I was going through the repeater fine. So that's good. So it must be something wonky with the Echolink connection. I've lost track what's connected to what these days. But something has to be kind of taken a good look at.
Yeah, I hope that somebody can check on Sheldon. Because the noise, even on your signal, Roy, the noise is 30%. On edge for whatever reason, it was 70 to 80%, and that's not the way it used to be up to like 3 weeks ago. I noticed this about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it hasn't changed. So hopefully, somebody will get on it during the week. All right. Thank you. W2PZ, back to net.
Okay. Very good, Rich. There was a gentleman, I think it was K2A in the night, who said that he was strong from Sheldon. He said I was strong from Glen Oaks to his radio. So I don't know. You know, we'll kind of bounce it off to the technical committee. They do this very well, and hopefully they'll solve the problem. So, you know, a lot of weirdness is going on as well. I follow the IRLP nodes. Usually at 8:30, Ontario connects. Until 10:30, they're not there. So they either got dropped or they couldn't make the connection or they gave up trying or something. So IRLP seems to be a little bit wonky as well. Anyway, anyone with any closing comments on what we've been discussing, I think I will put my little puzzle that I really didn't get to in my back pocket for another night. So if anyone has any closing comments on any of the topics that we were discussing, please hit that push to talk button.
Roy, a last question.
KD2BHD,
was that coming through Sheldon?
John.
Thank you, Jim. Rich, you doubled with Jim, so I didn't quite make out what you were asking. I think you were asking who was coming from where.
Yeah, I was asking if Ed was coming through. If Ed was coming through Sheldon also.
Glen Oaks.
Yeah, Ed is coming through Glen Oaks. Unfortunately, I think he's on his HP. Sometimes that gives you a good signal. Sometimes it's a bit noisy. But he's Glen Oaks.
Okay. Well, again, hopefully somebody will take a look into it. I'm saying that there's something not as strong either going into or coming out of Sheldon as has been in the last year or so. Again, if I had any trouble on any other repeater, I would be saying it's something with me. But since I'm full quieting on four other repeaters, I just don't know. All right. Thanks. We'll check in next week.
AC2GS. Very good, Rich. And thanks again, Jim, for your kind words. I do appreciate it. I put in more than a little effort here, and I'm glad you appreciate it. Anyway, I wanted to thank everyone who participated tonight. Like I say, participation is the grist of the mill. It supplies the engine. It's the whole purpose for these technical nets. This is not a show. I don't do a song and a dance. So I need you people to kind of participate and ask me questions or answer questions or tell me I don't know what I'm talking about or whatever. So I thank you, each and every one of you, and please come back next Sunday at 8 when we will once again try it again. But now it is time for the SpaceNet Report with full WS2N.
AC2GS, WS2N, and I'm going through Glen Oaks, so I won't have that problem. But Rich might have trouble hearing me if he's not copying Echolink. But anyway, we'll do this, and if you want to get updates, you know, you go get onto these frequencies tomorrow night at 8:30, and Club Info Net will have updates, and you'll probably find out about Middle Island with the antenna and all. So we'll look for that information tomorrow night. So there's going to be three crew flights to the International Space Station within 3 months. A couple of days on February 26th, you're going to have a Dragon crew 4 going up to the space station. They call that the crew 6 flight. So they'll be joining. Well, 7 people are up there right now. And then in April, another flight will be going up by the Starliner, and that will just be carrying 2 people. Starliner is one that Boeing has been putting together for many years. And, they had a successful unmanned flight a while back, and now they're going to do a duplicate of that dock with the space station, only for about 10 days, maybe 2 weeks. And then they're going to undock, and that will have a crew of 2. You have a Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams. Normally, once that gets into operation, instead of having 2, they're going to have 4 on Starliner. But it'll be great, instead of just having the American Dragon going up with a crew of 4, they'll alternate between Dragon and Starliner, which also will have a crew of 4. And of course, you'll still have the Russian crew of 3 going up in the Soyuz as time goes on. Another crew flight that you're going to have is Axiom, they call it Axiom 2 mission. Axiom is a private company, and they contract out with SpaceX and send a crew of 4 up on the Dragon. And they're only supposed to spend 10 days on station and then come back down. So it's NASA approves it for them to go there, but it's all 100% private. We're not paying for it as a taxpayer. So they'll go up, and hopefully they'll be able to return in 10 days. The last Axiom flight that went up for 10 days, but it took 17 days because of weather problems and all kinds of issues. They eventually got back, but they spent a lot more time on station than they originally thought. So, all right, so we'll continue on with another topic. Any comments?
KD2VHD, question on that?
Oh, okay. KD2VHD, go ahead.
You had mentioned because a project wasn't a public project or a government project that we didn't pay for it. I'm not sure that I get the connection with that. Most of the time when we pay for something that's not actually a public project, it costs more going through a process of becoming a contract or something. So I didn't get the connection there. Could you explain that?
Yeah, okay. We have the crew, they call it the Crew 6 flight going up. That's all NASA. That crew will be going up in February with 4 people. And they'll stay roughly for 6 months. That's all NASA. Yeah, we're paying for that. this Axiom deal that they have, Axiom company, gets, well, they actually get three people that are willing to pay to go on board, and then they actually have a pilot that will be, or a commander that would be also involved. And last time it was an ex-NASA, retired NASA astronaut that was the commander. In this case, it's Peggy Whitson. She's got like the most time on station, I think, than anybody. She's been up there many times. But again, she's officially retired from NASA, so she's now working for this private Axiom group. So all four people, I think it's roughly $50 million or so each, you know, give or take a couple of million dollars each, that they paid to SpaceX to do this. And then there's also money that's going from this Axiom group into the NASA general fund somehow for the use of all the equipment that's on board the station. And I think that's a rough idea of what's going on from what I've read. Back to you, Katie 2, BHD, WS2M.
I'll take that as a gray answer and hard answer. Fair enough. Back to you, Katie 2, BHD, clear.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I mean, I haven't looked into it that deeply, but overall, that's the idea I've gotten from. And there's another one planned, I think, in December, Axiom 3, the same type of thing. They've already got their crew picked out for that. To give you an idea, on that flight, it's going to be, well, I'll go into that 6 months from now, because like, sometimes the crews change on that. They have backup crews and all. You know, this one they have Peggy Whitson. She's going to be the commander. Again, she's not working for NASA anymore. And then you have the pilot, John Schofter. I'm not even sure where he comes from. Mission specialist, and there's two of them, and they're both from Saudi Arabia. So they're paying the tab, from what I understand. But you know, I'll definitely look into it as these flights continue on. The way I looked at it was, you know, these are private companies. They're supposed to be paying for everything themselves, paying SpaceX. Nothing to do with NASA, and they're actually supposed to be paying NASA for the use of the station. We'll clarify that as time goes on. Good question, though. WS2M.
Agreed, thank you. Our contract is having no interest in any particular agenda. Sounds fishy to me. So, sorry to interrupt. K2BHD, listening.
Okay. And I know Russia has had a lot of private flights years ago. They started them with Dennis Tito. And he was paying like $20 million for the seat. And he was an American that flew on a Soyuz flight. Since then, they've had eight other flights that also included a private person. And each time a private person went up, they were paying Roscosmos the money paying the Russians to do it. And they had nine such flights like that over the years. But then they stopped for a long time. And then recently, a couple of years ago, they sent up a film crew. They had an actress, and they had a director. And it was the same type of thing. This group that filmed it was supposed to be paying Roscosmos money to do this. Wasn't coming out of the Russian Roscosmos budget. A lot of weird things going on, I agree. Anyway, this is WS2M. Okay, on the news, of course, lately we've been hearing about these balloons that have been shot down. So I just want to go over that real quick. Yeah. I haven't heard anything directly, or you know, any letters from ARRL yet. But there is a group that launches balloons, amateur radio group from. They say they launch it from Illinois, and they've been doing this for quite a few years now. And some of their balloons go around the earth. In this case, this one guy says he's gone around the earth a half a dozen times. This would have been the seventh time. And got it somewhere near Alaska. And they kept getting reports back. They have the Whisper program on there. And different stations around the globe copy this balloon as it goes. And the last one that they heard was like about an hour or so before the F-22 supposedly shot it down with a Sidewinder missile. And they call it a PICO balloon. And this one's called PICO K9YO. So it's a call letter they're using. But it's a possibility that they should have shot down a ham balloon. So again, we'll probably eventually hit, confirm that.
WB2EAV.
Yeah, Ed, okay, we're going to go to you. Eventually we'll probably confirm that. They said that they were looking for the debris and they really can't find it, so I don't know if they'll ever... I think what they got hit with the Sidewinder missile, I mean, there's probably just smoke left. Anyway, over to you, Ed.
Question number one, the ham balloons. What is the weight of the payload? Because the size of a balloon is very, very, very determined by the weight of the payload. And if it's a light payload, like a weather balloon, you're not going to have that big of a balloon. And so that's just one item of curiosity. Also, if you have something that's big enough and heavy enough, you have to have a transponder, which is going up through the air traffic control lane, and it has to be visible to planes and air traffic control. So once you have a transponder, it's a whole different ballgame. And here's the question. They talk about shooting it down with Sidewinder TCC missile. Sidewinder is supposed to home in on hot engine fluid. So what exactly does it home in on with a balloon?
Yeah, I think a Sidewinder missile, I'm going by news reports now. You know, they're talking about $300,000 missile being shot at a $13.33 silver 32-inch mylar diameter, 32-inch mylar balloon is what they're claiming. And they're called PICO balloons, because it's only supposed to have this couple of gram weight on the bottom of it. I'm sure this is all will eventually come out if it's true with ARRL. They've got to come up with some kind of an answer, one way or the other. Either confirm this or just say that they don't know, or just say it's all a lot of baloney. But they're supposed to have this Whisper, the weak signal propagation reported that goes on the bottom of the balloon. That's supposedly it, along with a GPS, so they know where the balloon is. But it's definitely, last time I read it, was 42,000 feet. Anyway, that's a wrong height for, they don't want to interfere with airplanes, and that's pretty close to being interfering with airplanes. Back to you, Ed.
Yeah, 42,000 is still in the commercial air traffic range. No, if you're talking about a 36-inch balloon, I mean, that would be insanity. If anybody's got an eyeball look at it, they'd realize this thing has a payload, like you said, measured in grams. It can't exactly be doing too much with that.
Okay, yeah. I'm interested to find out the final story, but I thought I'd bring it up because, this is on one of the websites. This one ham called up, gave his call letter anyway. He called up, they said the FBI, and he's trying to let them know it's probably one of our balloons. Oh, yeah, Up to 47,000 feet, I just found it. What was this guy's call? His call was W5KUB. And I looked him up, just a regular ham that's at the ballooning. But he was calling up the government. He said the government didn't want to talk to him. And this is coming from Aviation Week, which is, you know, an okay website. It's not a bizarre kind of website. And they say in some cases they have these balloons transmitting on HF, VHF, and UHF. You know, I guess different balloons for different purposes. But I remember seeing this a couple of times in QST. You know, they showed pictures of the balloons, them launching them years ago, probably back in the, it's got to be back in the late 90s or something. And the one I'm talking about is they had a transmitter it took pictures. So, I mean, it went way high up, the high part of the stratosphere where they would take pictures, and they showed pictures of the horizon, you know, how the horizon curved. I mean, it almost looked like it was in space. That was a ham project. But we'll see as time goes on. I'm sure they've had different sized balloons, all kinds of different equipment over the years. But, you know, I mean, it is a thing. We know hams do this. That's a fact. Whether or not they're conflating the stories between ham radio balloons and, you know, shooting sidewinder missiles, we don't know for sure. Time will tell. Okay. A new spacecraft that's in orbit around the moon right now. It's actually a South Korean spacecraft that was launched a while back on a Falcon 9 rocket. But NASA put a camera on board, an infrared type of camera, and they call it Shadow Cam. And it took like forever, I think, for this thing to get into proper orbit. But it's in a retrolinear, highly elliptical orbit right now. It's what they wanted to do. And the camera is working. The idea is to look deep inside the craters. The early pictures that came back are just calibrating pictures that they're doing, and eventually they're going to have more pictures with that have better resolution to it. I mean, they did show, I guess I got this on the NASA site, you know, what the inside of this crater looks like, you know, with a normal picture, let's say, from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter that's around there, and this new camera, and they can actually deploy to the bottom of this picture. And they're talking about the Shackleton crater in particular, on the south pole of the moon. So as the weeks go on, I'm sure they're going to have better pictures coming back, and we'll see if this really works. The idea is to see if there's frozen ice, which I believe there is, on the bottom of these craters. In the future, when all these Artemis missions start going to the moon on a regular basis, as the years go on, they'll develop the capability of sending robotic missions into the bottom of these craters. The theory, of course, is if there's solid ice down there, you could dig the ice out, you could mine the ice, you could take that, melt it down, you could have drinking water, you could have split it up, you could have hydrogen and oxygen for fuel, oxygen to breathe, and maybe even use it for fuel cell systems to make electricity to supplement the solar panels that eventually they plan on putting all over the southern part of the moon. So anyway, this thing is apparently working. Called the Korean Pathfinder Lunar Orbiter. They give it a name in South Korea called Danuri, D-A-N-U-R-I. So we'll follow this mission as time goes on. It seems to be successful so far.
Question.
Okay, yes, go ahead.
I was just wondering if there was any nut job that suggested that there was something weird going on at the South Pole of the lunar landscape in recent weeks, months, years.
Well, there's always nut jobs, but well, what do you think they're claiming? I haven't heard anything like that, but they definitely plan on if and when there's eventually a base, this is where they plan on putting it, on the South Pole. And we're kind of like in a space race with China. China's got the same idea. They would like to set up a base there too. But what have you heard that anybody's been talking about the South Pole for?
It was mostly as a joke. I had mentioned it in the past. I don't have an answer or a theory or a proposed explanation, but there's something going on down there on the South Pole, the lunar South Pole, that seems to be attracting an awful lot of attention. It hasn't been even attempted to be explained. Maybe it's nothing.
Okay, I get it. Well, on the South Pole, there's another reason that they want to go there, as opposed to, let's say, the equator part of the moon. Light tends to hit there. I've read 92% of the time it's light. So they'll be able to set up solar panels there. You won't have that 14-day nighttime like you would have in the equator. 14 days of night, 14 days of day. South Pole, you'll have a lot more day than you're going to have night. Maybe 8% or so of the time it would go into total darkness. And for that time, you could have just supplemented power. So I said maybe they could use fuel cells. There's plans on eventually bringing fission units up that are going to produce, each one's going to produce around 10 kilowatts. They like set up about four or five of them on the moon on the South Pole. But most of the time they'll be able to take solar panels, and instead of just laying them out on the ground, they could actually put them up vertically, because if you put it vertically, you can get better sun rays, more of a direct angle, plus it would last longer than just laying them down on the ground. So between that and the possible, or they actually think probable ice that's in the bottom of these craters to actually mine out, those are your basic reasons for going to the South Pole.
The whole thing just sounds quite fishy to me. I dispute none of your points. I think they're all correct from what I understand, but the whole thing just sounds a little fishy to me.
Okay. There's going to be an attack of that South Pole in the future. June of this year, the first lander should be going in there. It's a private company that have built these landers. This one's called Nova C, and Nova C is built by Intuitive Machines. Now, Intuitive Machines has been at this for years. They wanted to be like the first people to private company to land on the moon. Years ago, it was a Google Prize before 2017. The Google Prize was, you were going to get like $30 million or something for if you could land a private vehicle on the moon, take pictures in HD quality, and have the vehicle take off again and go 500 meters away and land again. Do the same thing, take more pictures. If you did that, you were going to get $30 million. And there were dozens of these companies around the globe, and not only this country, but other countries that were competing to get this money. And they had, it had to be done by 2017, I think, like March or so, 2017. Anyway, the time passed, and Google dropped it. But some of these companies kept on going, developing these systems. And this is a result of it. A couple of companies. This one, the Peregrine by Astrobiotic, which will be launched later this year, is going to be another one. And that's going to go up on the new Vulcan rocket that NASA's building. NASA wants to replace the reliable Atlas V rocket and the reliable Delta IV rocket with the new Vulcan rocket, which is, I mean, it's built. They've got the engines installed, and I guess within a couple of months they'll probably try to launch this thing. And usually on the maiden flight, they just put like a mass weight on top, you know, and hope it goes into orbit. With this Vulcan rocket, they're going to put Peregrine on, which is a lunar lander built by Astrobiotic, and hope that thing lands on the moon. This one here is I guess is ahead of that schedule. This is built by Intuitive Machines, and it's called the Nova C. And they have other missions, other landers coming out after this, but this will be the first one, and they hope to land on the South Pole. And if you could have a series of these things landing there, by the time you actually have a crew mission go up, which is going to be a couple of years from now, actually land, and it, again, the planned landing for Artemis 3 would be on the South Pole. You would have all this infrastructure in place. You'd have cameras on board these small landers, like this one. And I just could imagine, the first crew actually coming in for a landing over there, and having live, HD, beautiful pictures coming from the moon of the, and having it follow across the lunar sky as it comes to a landing. I mean, I could just predict that eventually, that's what it could lead to, a few years from now, probably. 2025 or so. Any comments?
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Okay, that was a nice ID. And anyway, I don't know, a lot of people would say I'm very optimistic. Well, gee, I definitely am. Realistic to a point. If I hear something negative, I'll report on that as well. Or hopefully not so. Hopefully that all comes to pass. There's a lot of people all over the globe working for different companies trying to accomplish having people land back on the moon. Canada plans on actually having an astronaut. One of the astronauts on board one of the Artemis missions. It is an international endeavor. They're dealing with their robotic arms, probably put a new space station. You have the European Space Agency. They want to put astronauts on the moon. The only way they're going to get there right now is with the Artemis program. And they can go for a ride eventually. They're the ones building the service modules for the Artemis program. So that's what we have to look forward to, I hope. Any comments? I just get away from the landings and what's going on with the moon. I just want to talk about Hubble. A lot of people want to just talk about James Webb Space Telescope. I see that in all the reports. But Hubble's still out there doing stuff. For the first time, they were able to actually measure the mass of a white dwarf star. Now, they've done white dwarf stars before, but they're always binary stars. And they're able to get information from that, roughly, you know, the mass of those stars. But one, there's a star, a white dwarf, by itself, they haven't really been able to figure out the mass. But now they can, using Hubble and what they call gravitational lensing. They knew exactly when this one particular star was going to be right behind this white dwarf star. And due to the gravitational lensing of the white dwarf star itself, the star in the background is supposed to be in a certain location, but with gravitational lensing, you know, when they take pictures at just at the right time, that star appears in a different location. And by doing the math and figuring it out, they were able to figure out the mass of the white dwarf. So I thought that was pretty interesting. You know, I mean, I know Einstein proved relativity, you know, back in 2020 or whatever it was. Now, correction, 1920, back in those days. But here they are still using a similar process. In this case, the gravitational lensing of the white dwarf. In Einstein's time, they used the gravitational lensing of the sun background star. Any comments? 2N. Talk about bad news. The Progress cargo vehicle recently docked to the International Space Station.
They've got roughly
6,000 pounds of food and supply, fuel, water. So that successfully docked with the space station. Since December, there's been a problem because one of the crew vehicles, Soyuz Russian vehicle, rang a leak. All kinds of ammonia leaked out of the cooling system. Now, NASA knows about it. They photographed it. They determined that that vehicle is no longer safe for the crew of three, including one American, Rubio, came up on that one and is supposed to go back on that one. Well, it's no longer safe to do that.
Russia is now setting up an uncrewed vehicle to eventually dock.
Link active. All autonomous. You don't need a commander or pilot to do that. And they plan on putting this crew in that vehicle and going back down to Earth that way. You know, everything sounded good, and they had a whole plan on how they were going to do this. So now this Progress vehicle comes up and docks with the space station. There's already another Progress. They call it Progress 82. That's already docked with the space station. And they noticed changes in that vehicle. They did a checkout of that Progress, you know, cargo vehicle. Sure enough, that thing has no coolant. That thing leaked as well. So now they're starting to think, well, maybe it's not a micrometeorite. You know, maybe this is something that's being done, you know, accidentally in a factory or something. So now they're looking into it a lot more, and they're delaying the time, or they plan on delaying the time that this other vehicle would come up without a crew. So Russia, you know, changes their mind from one minute to the next. They were going to delay it another month, but now they've brought it back to the same time again. So during this month, they plan on sending that vehicle back up anyway. And naturally, they're hoping that there aren't any more leaks in the next uncrewed vehicle that arrives at the space station. So now they wound up with two Russian spacecraft, each one with a leak. Nothing they could do about the Progress one, Progress 82, that they just found leaking. So they undocked it, and they're going to let it burn up over the South Pacific like they normally do. And that's what they did, I think, yesterday. They undocked it. They brought it close to the space station. Took, zoom photographs of this thing to try to see if they could find any kind of a problem. Photographs, you know, came up as negative. And they even thought about redocking it to the space station and looking further, but they said no. They just sent it off and burnt it up. So, like I said before, if I come across problems, I'll talk about it. And that's one of them. Anyway, I'm looking at the time. We're a little after 11. We'll shut it down. I have a couple other stories that we'll cover them next week. We have more time. Anyway, we'll turn it back to you, Roy, AC2GS, WX2N, for the Space Net Report for the TechNet. Back to you.
AC2GS, thank you, Paul. Thank you for the Space Net Report. Thank you for all that you do here on the Technical Net. And thank you for all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I certainly do. And thanks to everyone who participated tonight. Despite the noise, despite the link problems, despite all the little hiccups, I appreciate your participation. It makes or breaks the Technical Net. And I hope you'll join me next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. As Dick would often, K2RIW, end his Technical Net, be kind to each other. That's always good advice. Also like to add my favorite Latin philosopher, Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep an open mind. And have fun this week, and don't get too cold. And take care of yourself and take care of each other. And
thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Code number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link clear. The Limewire Technical Net, and I am clear.
And 2BHC Mobile. November 2, Victor Hotel, Zulu Mobile, listening.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England Reflector.
Link active.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 1:55 a.m. Mostly cloudy. Temperature 44 degrees.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Mark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 5:01 a.m. Cloudy. Temperature 45 degrees.
Mark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Good morning. The time is 6 a.m. Cloudy. Temperature 43 degrees.
Thank you.